Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to Books Boys, live from the Grand Library, the Dean and PJ.
He's PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean, and we are the Books Boys.
The one and only.
This is the Books Boys show. Get it? Buy it? Books.
Books. It's the end of the year, but Dean, I have to tell you, I'm still a bit confused. I mean, again, I went to my local library.
Okay.
And between the cat food and the disinfectant, I mean, that's where the books are kept, right? Between the cat food and the...
Should be, yeah.
I mean, I was looking for an old copy of Julius Caesar by Shakespeare. And it was very hard to read the writing. I mean, it was almost transparent. It was in rolls. So, I mean, that's where you get the storage, right?
Yeah, I mean, you get them in rolls, in scrolls, yeah.
Yeah, it was very hard to distinguish. I mean, it was really... I don't know what's up nowadays, guys, but... You have to make the ink a bit deeper. It was very hard to distinguish between Julius Caesar and the latest edition of Bridget Jones' Diary of...
The disinfectant. BJ, is it possible now that you got the toilet roll again?
What? I thought toilet rolls are kept in libraries and...
It's tricky, you know. Confused. They tell us that the books come on paper. It's tricky. Look, we're over a year into this. I'm not sure if we've made any progress, you know.
Right. Well, look, I was hoping to do my annual review in great detail of Julius Caesar, but obviously it didn't work out, guys. So other books shall be reviewed. And just keep looking for those books. Keep looking for those. They might not always be in roll format. I hear they also flatten them nowadays.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they flatten them, yeah.
Right, okay. Okay, fair enough. All right, so that explains why I've read one book this month, because I did find something, and it's in Japanese, so I had to remake it this month. It's been very
At least we got something. At least we got something read. You know, it doesn't matter the language.
Oh, indeed.
We should start, I guess, by wishing that everyone had a good Christmas and a good New Year's, and we're going to start off 2022 with some books discussion. But just say thanks, you know, everyone for listening, and of course, you can get us on Radio Oxen in Oxfordshire and on all your usual podcatchers, and we're part of the TNC network and everything like that. So just thanks to everyone who's tuned in. PJ, do you know how many shows we've done on Patreon this month?
Now, I know you've been very busy with with our mutual friend. And
with our mutual friend, yes.
And we did one too. You did a lot, especially you did a lot of shows. Was it about 10 shows?
You know, it must be close. So we released Books Boys episode 14 on December 1st. December 4th, I did episode 12 of Forensic Friends. That's the ancient Greek court speeches. That was at Demosthenes. December 7th, Dark Place Dreamers, Hell Hath Fury with Dark Place Robert. That was the Richard Ayoade and Matt Berry crazy show where they're in a hospital, but it's a show within a show and they've got shotguns and there's things flying around with telekinesis. I love the show and he hated it, and it's quite funny to review together.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I love Richard Ayoade, so I haven't actually seen that.
Then December 11th with our mutual friend, which I think we can now name as Playboy Alex. We did Playboys episode 7, Measure for Measure. We spent a full hour reviewing in detail all the themes and characters from Measure for Measure. December 16th, Music Men 2, the Christmastime collection, all my old Christmas songs. That one is nice. Is a bit dodgy, so listen with care. Some of those songs are not the best. December 18th, Playboys episode 8, Othello. We spent a full hour and a half on that one. Really, really got into the nitty-gritty of Othello. And those are both on the A-level syllabus, those two Playboys. So any A-level English students, it's worth listening to that one. Mm-hmm. December 20th, Interviews from the Vault 8 with a lovely singer-songwriter, Megan Carey, from her album Building This House. So we talked about that. December 22nd, Film Fellows, Episode 3. Robert and Alex and myself, we all watched Nightcrawler. You remember Nightcrawler, PJ?
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. Oh, my God. That would have been great to be part of the discussion because I really did enjoy that movie as well. So, man, you're the ultimate fan. You must have seen it around like 10 times now.
Oh, more. I'd say more. Yeah, I've seen it millions of times. And while we recorded that, we also recorded Caper Captains, Episode 6, because Alex had also read And Then There Were None. So we released that on Christmas Day, no less.
It's also, yeah, also one of my favorite Agatha Christie books.
Mm-hmm. And then myself and yourself, we did episode 2 of Poetry Pals. We talked about some of your poems just now.
That's great.
Well, so that's a ridiculous amount of content. And you can get it for $3 or £2.50.
I mean, yeah, it's only for £2.50. Okay, so some great content. That's just a part of what we did all year round. We started this in April with a series of Shakespeare episodes, and it expanded to, I think, around 8 different categories, including the perhaps not as popular series so far, Renaissance.
Yeah, we did Renaissance. We did Dr. Faustus. We never got around to Tamburlaine, but maybe one day.
We tried Tamburlaine. I'm afraid I didn't get through. I was enjoying
it. It's very dull.
Okay. So, look, I was honestly enjoying the beginning, but then it's a 200-page play if you add the two parts. Yeah, but Dr. Faustus, we renaissance to renaissance, but I'm afraid the renaissance also then deceased.
It was a very, very brief flash in the pan renaissance.
Exactly, yeah.
We did a lot of stuff. There's so much stuff on there, and you can get that all at patreon.com/booksboys. Playboys, Caper Captains, Film Fellows, it's all on there. Plus, you get this show a day early as well. So for anyone downloading on Apple or whatever, you actually get it a day early and without some of the ads. So there's a benefit there as well. And if you pay a little bit extra, you get a Booksboys t-shirt.
Oh my God. Ooh, well, I'm looking forward to my copy and my own t-shirt, because you said you're going to give me one and I did see you there in Ireland and I didn't get one.
Oh, I need to sort that. Yeah, we need to sort that for you.
And there's something very... By the way, Dean, and we're keeping this a secret, but there's something very special happening in January.
There should indeed. Yes.
Something very special to start off that lovely year 2022. So keep in tune.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited for that. So there'll be good things coming.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we get into what we've read this month? Shall I go first?
Go ahead, yeah.
So now I'm blaming you. I read this one on your recommendation, Isabel Allende, okay. La Casa de los Espíritus, so The House of Spirits. Now, this one took me half the month. It's, you know, almost 500 pages, 450 pages, whatever. But man, they're slow pages. I'll tell you what
I've got to tell you, I didn't recommend The House of Spirits to you. I recommended The Japanese Lover.
Okay. I was aware that you recommended the author. Maybe I decided that the book title
sounded good. You see, like I've been wanting to read that book because it is very popular in Spain and Latin America, and it's supposed to be good fun, but you didn't enjoy it.
My main problem with it is there's very little dialogue. So it's just narrative. So there's little bits of dialogue, sure, now and again, but it's really 450 pages just block text that never stops, and it was very tedious at times. You know, I don't like that. Okay. I like to kind of skip through the descriptions and get to the discussions, and there was really very few discussions. It made me read it so slowly. You know, it made it really a struggle for me. You know, I read it in Spanish, of course, and it's all right. You know, and the title's a bit of a misnomer. So the reason it's called The House of Spirits is because of Clara, right? Clara is the clairvoyant and, you know, well named. But We see her parents, and that's fine. And then they have two daughters, Clara and Bella. Bella's the beautiful, okay? Oh. And there's a chap who loves Bella. And she's got green hair and whatever. And she's very strikingly beautiful. And then I was thinking, oh, this is brilliant. I love the romance. They're talking about the beauty of this girl. She's like a work of art. All the men think she's amazing. And then she dies very, very early. Like at the beginning of the book, she's gone. So the same guy who was engaged to Bella is like, well, I'll just marry her sister, sure. So I'll marry Clara instead. But look, he's not a nice guy. Esteban, he's not a nice guy because he's having affairs. He's not just having affairs. He's essentially raping a lot of peasants. He's like, I'll just go on the horse, take the lasso and catch a peasant girl. You know, he's just kind of not really a good chap. And he's going to brothels and all this kind of thing, you know. So he's not likable. Clara is likable. And, you know, from her, it's the house of spirits because she's like talking to spirits and doing all this clairvoyant stuff. But there's not really an awful lot of that. And then once it goes through several generations, you know, so we have the parents, then we have Clara and Bella, then we have Bianca, which is her child, and then Alba. Once Clara kind of gets old, the spirits thing becomes irrelevant. Like this isn't a book all about like different spirits and things like that. It's really irrelevant. The title is quite misleading, actually. So that made me, you know, a little bit sad. And there's one great line, because some of the family aren't great. I mean, I just mentioned the rapes and things. And there's a bit where Bianca gets pregnant and, you know, she's not married. And her dad says, well, I'm not going to have any, you know, B words in this family. And she says, well, I think if you look, you'll find that there's some already. And that's the one quote I really remember very well from the book. Look, it's fine. And there's a couple of funny moments. There's a lot of rapes, actually. It's quite difficult, you know, even of children. There's difficult bits to read in this.
That's very interesting because I've only read one novel of hers, which is El Amante Japonés, The Japanese Lover, which came out, I think, around 2016 or 2015. And and it did have more dialogue. So this is her first novel, The House of Spirits. So maybe she matured.
Got more dialogue.
The same thing, the most striking thing I remember about the book was both the historical kind of, it was talking about the Japanese concentration camps in the U.S. So I don't know if you know about them. Excuse me, the U.S. concentration camps after the Japanese, which is not something that people talk about, that the U.S. had concentration camps for Japanese, which were treated better than in the Nazis' concentration camps, I think. I mean, that's debatable.
Yeah, wow.
But it really talked about that. But the most striking thing for me was there was a scene in it where basically a child was used for pornography, and it was more updated than what it sounds to be because it was really about internet pedophile pornography. And I thought, Jesus, very, very extreme, like, because it was pretty detailed as well. So maybe it must be a thing with her to be showing like the dark side.
One of her themes, I guess. Yeah.
So I mean, it was still very striking and I suppose relevant because you do have to talk about this awful stuff at some point. And she was trying to just, but it's heavy going.
It made it because, you know, you've got the character and he's going around, you know, with a horse lassoing and everything. And you think it's almost ridiculous. But then when there's a scene with, you know, with a chap molesting a child, that hit me too hard. Yeah. You know, that's not ridiculous anymore. That's just like, this is difficult to read, you know? And then there's a poetry, like a, it's not a beautiful poetry, it's a disgustingly dark poetry where one of the chaps who eventually gets revenge on the family is like the product of, and he's like, well, you know, I'm actually your son and you don't know it because you raped my mum, so now I'm going to rape your daughter. And he tries to create this like cyclical, you know, in his mind, some kind of beautiful poetry, essentially. There's some sick stuff in the book. But it also, you know, as you said about the politics, it gets into the politics of Chile. There's a lot of political stuff, but that comes in more near the end. And to be honest, by that stage, they kind of lost me a little bit. Just I didn't think the story flowed well enough. We go from generation to generation, and essentially we cover four generations. The problem is, a lot of it, it's just snapshots of their lives, and there's not really an ongoing story thread, you know? So I just find that it didn't read like a novel at times. It just didn't flow well. There was nothing to invest me in the story. Sure, there's a few things, but not really enough, you know, because we're moving through such a long period of time and so many generations of the family. And when I kind of finished the book, I sort of thought, what was the point, really, you know? we learn a little bit about Esteban, and it also has an annoying thing of having narration and then occasionally just having like some first person narration mixed in with like a third person narration, and it's a bit jarring to figure out who's talking at times. But look, it's fine, you know, it's an all right book. I didn't not enjoy it, but I'm kind of wondering, do I want to read any more Isabel Allende, to be honest, you know?
Is it? That's very influenced by 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. It's that whole kind of that book came out in the early 60s, 100 Years of Solitude, and House of Spirits came out in the early 80s. And magic realism really follows a lot of that one book, 100 Years of Solitude, which is generational. And it tells the history of a Latin American country through lenses of several generations of one family. And basically, this sounds very similar. I haven't read Casa Spirits, but it's following that idea from the land, like scenes from the lives of several generations, but then ultimately culminating in some historical, you know, like coup d'etat, or like always ending with some kind of despot who's controlling the country.
Yeah.
And she seems to be telling the story of Chile, whereas Gabriel Garcia Marquez told the story of Colombia and 100 Years of Solitude.
It sounds more or less the same, though. Yeah, it sounds more or less the same.
I'm looking forward to reading The House of Spirits because I love that 100 Years of Solitude kind of narrative. Mm.
Well, I haven't read the other books then. But, I've got a middling review. It was enjoyable enough to read, but nothing special.
Okay.
After that, I promised everyone Christmas Aristotle. Okay, I know that's what the kids want for Christmas. Okay, and I hope for all the kids listening that they got some. Which brings us, of course, to this month's sponsor. It is, of course, Christmas Aristotle. He is the best of all the Aristotles. And if you go to christmasaristotle.gov, you can get some Aristotle Christmas merchandise. So, I read the Nicomachean Ethics, okay? The Ethics 4 for Nicomachus. Would you say
is very dry because supposedly...
yeah. I would say it's very dry.
Well, you see, they say it's very dry because supposedly he didn't write it. Supposedly, there's a theory that a student of his wrote down what he got from Aristotle's lecture.
Lecture notes, that's...
But anyway,
that's quite
I haven't read
Aristotle.
It. I mean, we're both Plato fans, you know. We're both read Plato. We never really got into Aristotle. So what made you go into Plato's students?
I just thought it was time. Look, I wrote down many years ago a list of things that I should read at the university library, and now that I've got membership, I've taken that list. This little tiny sliver of paper with four or five things written down on that I've carried about with me from house to house, and now I've finally got my library membership back. And so I went in and I read the Nicomachean Ethics. I couldn't do the complete works of Aristotle the way I did with Plato. Half of it's, you know, just animal descriptions and a lot of biology. And then even when you get to the philosophy half, it's like, you know, on the parts of an indivisible line or something. Like, I'm not going to read that. I'm sorry. Like, I try my best, but I'm not going to read a book about
it. You've got a high tolerance. So.
But look, this one, you'll know a little bit probably from having done philosophy. Aristotle's ethics, they do differ from Plato's. He talks about virtue ethics and things like that. I'm just going to give a couple of quick snapshots from this. There's no point dwelling on it too much. He talks in the beginning about the fact that everything aims for the ultimate good, which he seems to talk about happiness. So happiness seems to be what things are aiming for. But some of this is dry to read. You know, now each man judges well the things he knows, and of these he is a good judge. And so the man who has been educated in a subject is a good judge of that subject. And the man who has received an all-round education is a good judge in general. And it's just like paragraphs and paragraphs of things that you would just take for granted. You know, like, yeah, if you're educated in the thing, then you know about the thing. Like, you know, there's just pages and pages of this. But
okay, those kind of descriptions, yeah.
Yeah. And he talks about a lot of different things, universal goods. One of the big things he talks about is practical wisdom, right? Phronesis. So that's like having wisdom in practical things. It's not this like rational wisdom. It's not maybe, it's more practical knowledge of like useful things. And he gives us that sort of initial talk about practical wisdom. It wasn't really something that Plato talked about. But this bit's funny. We had perhaps better consider the universal good and discuss what is meant by it. Although such an inquiry is made an uphill one by the fact that the forms have been introduced by friends of our own. So he's saying basically this has been made more difficult because Plato put the damn forms in place. And it's, although it might be thought better, indeed it might be our duty, for the sake of maintenance to the truth even, to destroy what touches us closely. So he goes on to basically trash Plato then at that point.
Oh no, okay, his own teacher.
He's like, yeah.
That's
like,
what happens with students. They turn their backs to their teachers.
And he disagrees with Socrates at one point as well. He says there's a saying that no one is voluntarily wicked, or no one... And, you know, he goes on then to say this is partly false, and he kind of trashes then what Socrates said about no one voluntarily doing something bad. There's a big, big, long section on temperance, which goes for just pages and pages about temperance. But essentially, virtue ethics is you take the meme, right? So instead of being really, really scared, which would be cowardice, you also don't want to be foolhardy, which is like you're the first person on the battle line every time. You're running straight in. You're going to get killed. You know, so like for him, courage is actually the medium, and
talks about like a virtuous mean, right? So it's like in the middle, it's like cowardice is too little, and to be rash is then excessive. So you find something in the middle.
Yeah, isn't that and that's him for every virtue, essentially. You know, for every virtue and vice, you find something in the middle, whether it's temperance, whether it's whatever. You know, with cowardice, you always go for something in the middle. Problem is, the problem with virtue ethics is it's not consequentialism, so it's not based on the consequences of what you do, and it's not deontology based on rules. It's based on the character of the person, but it's very circular. So like, you know, a good person is the person who does good things, just like a good lute player is the person who plays in a lute while. It doesn't explain anything, and that's the main problem. You know, he talks about it like a good builder builds well by practicing building, but in order to practice building, he needs to be a good builder. And, you know, so it's quite circular, you know, yeah. But his idea is if you just keep practicing these things, you'll like express the virtues more, essentially. But it's nice. It's a bit wishy-washy. I don't know how much I really buy into that, you know. But he does some groundbreaking stuff. He says most people do not do these, but take refuge in theory and think that being philosophers, and they will become good in this way, behaving somewhat like patients who listen attentively to their doctors, but do none of the things they are offered to do. So he speaks out actually against essentially other philosophers and sophists and everything. So he sees himself, I think, as being quite groundbreaking, really. And, you know, but whether or not he really is, I don't know. Look, I'm not going to lie. Obviously, reading this can be quite dull at times.
Yeah.
If you're interested in it, then, you know, you can give it a try. But I'm not necessarily going to say that everyone should go out and read this one, because probably the majority of people won't have any interest in it, you know, and that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so it's kind of like if you're really into the old ancient Greek philosophy and you've read Plato and you want to move on.
Yeah, look, people keep saying to me, man, look, I finished Plato. Like, I read all of Plato. What do I do next? You get
it's a very common problem, you know. I mean, people calling up, and it's a big dilemma, guys. So if you're facing that dilemma, so many of us face, maybe just try out Aristotle.
The problem is so severe. I'm thinking about setting up like a premium rate hotline, and people can just call in,
right? Because we have to deal with these problems, guys. Yeah. Just give us a call, yeah.
555 Plato, you know, and they'll say, "What do I do? I've read all of Plato," and I'll say, "Man, Christmas Aristotle." Get on it.
Christmas era, so get on it. Here it is. Yeah, so look, government, listen to us. If you want to fund us and just give us some free copies of some Aristotle's work, because this is what we need, you know. It's basically like a heroin addict, you know what I mean? As they come there, give us some more Plato, man. It's like, we don't have any more. I'm sorry, but we've got something of a lesser caliber. Maybe this will, you know, this will satisfy up to an extent. And you know, it's radical stuff, you know, Plato. It's very addictive.
I think that the great philosophers, they do go downhill. So, you know, Socrates is my hero. Plato is a little bit less. Aristotle is a little bit less. You know, each time we go from teacher to student, we lose a little bit of something special, you know.
And then we don't even talk about Seneca or one of those chaps. We forget about all the Romans.
That's it.
You're a big fan of Descartes and his cats. So, you know, that sometimes you get the odds.
Descartes, the ultimate armchair philosopher. I love his gentlemanly lifestyle. He really, that does it for me, you know.
He's great, yeah.
What I'm going to do next is, I've got a clip here. It's less than a minute long, But it was a little book recommendation sent in by our good friend, Darkless Robert.
Well, Lord.
Hi, Dean and PJ. I just have a quick book recommendation. It's called How Many Miles to Babylon? I read that when I was in my Leaving Cert year down in the Republic of Ireland. The entire concept of the book is that it's about an Anglo-Irish man who just wants to be friends with a common Irishman. And there's constantly these barriers being put up. His mother doesn't want him playing with them. He manages to sneak off and play with them occasionally. They both join the army together to fight in World War One. But because he's an Anglo-Irish man, he's put in the position of an officer. So again, there's always this class division between him and his friend that he's just never allowed to overcome. It's an interesting book. I'd have a go at it and see what you make of Classist Ireland.
There you go. Thanks to Robert. And if you like Robert, you can hear him on our Patreon when we talk about Darth Marie's Dark Place. Do you know that book, PJ?
I've heard of it. It's by Jennifer Johnston. So if you're into Irish literature, I've heard of the book. It's quite famous. But no, I haven't actually. Have you had it read?
No, I've spoken to Robert about it. And he asked if he could send in the recommendation, but I haven't read it. No.
Yeah, I'd love to read it. This sounds very good.
Why don't you tell us what you've read? And I should say real quick before you go, there's only two of us today. I had to give a little Alfred Christmas off. All the money that he's getting paid to be on the show when he's taking Christmas off. You know?
Well, what's he doing now? What's so good about the thing he's doing? That's, well, who does he think he is?
He's got the record player on and he's listening to Ray Conniff, Christmas album on vinyl. So he's a very cool chap. Got himself a little glass of...
He's obviously too cool for show right now. He's literally too cool for show.
He's made an old-fashioned and he's just chilling out. But look, why don't you tell us what you've read, Peter?
Well, talking about Murakami. So I started off the whole kind of Murakami stream, I think, was back in October. I talked about what I talk about when I talk about running. Mm-hmm. And then you read Hardboiled Wonderland in the end of the year. Hardboiled Wonderland and the end of the world. And now we're talking about a book that was released, I think, just after Hardboiled Wonderland. Maybe after Norwegian Wood, around the same time period in the 80s. And it's called Hitsuju Otoko no Christmas, which means the sheep man's adventure. And this book is not translated. Little pocket edition in Japan. They always give you these. You can get for very cheap these books that just literally fit into your pocket. You often say pocketbook, but they never fit into your pocket in Europe. In my experience, they actually do in Japan. You see it here, Dean.
You need to get bigger pockets, PJ.
It fits in the pocket, and I love the fact that this was not a book release because I had read most of Murakami's stuff at that time when I was living in Tokyo. And then I thought, well, look, what else has he got? And he's got a lot of material. He's got half of the literature he's written is not released. It's just that the big books, they tend to be released, the big novels, sometimes the big nonfiction books. But this basically is a bit too niche, I think, for the Western market, supposedly, because it's a... What's the word? It's not a sequel. It's a spin-off of his third novel, A Wild Sheep Chase, which is often considered his first proper novel because it's really the first novel he really dedicated full time in. And The Wild Sheep Chase I read in Japan, and it's a beautiful novel about a man trying to. As an oft always as Murakami is trying to find himself. He's trying to find himself. Also, he's trying to find his lost friend called the Rat. So The Wild Sheep Chase is third book in a series of novels.
You're holding it up to me, and it's got a delightful little sheep costume chap on the front there.
It's lovely. Look, I love it very much, this book. Basically, it's a spin-off. Because the sheep man is just a man wearing a sheep outfit all the time. He never takes it off. And you're not exactly sure why. And it's just basically the spin-off is about this one character in the book. And Murakami wrote this little novella. It's even shorter mm-hmm. than a novella. About the sheep man's Christmas. And the sheep man is living in a society where there are people and there are people dressed as sheep full time. It's kind of like a society. He went to sheepman school and he studied the sheepman lifestyle. He's dedicated to it. And it starts off him talking to another sheepman and about entering the annual Christmas song competition for sheepman. And it basically decides to write a Christmas song and to win that competition. But this is in the summer, and a month passes by, then the next and the next, and no inspiration comes to him. And he blames it on his landlady. He's like, he says, he thinks he's an idiot and a real fool. And he's trying to play the piano, and nothing's really happening, not even a single melodic line. And he just, he's very fond of donuts, as you see here in the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always eating his lovely donuts. The donuts with a hole in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
But why am I mentioning that? That's very important to you. Because he goes to a park and there is literally a sheepman expert who goes to talk with him. He's just sitting there kind of conveniently in the park as well. And he invites the sheepman over to dinner. And he tells him, bring along those lovely cinnamon donuts. And so the sheepman goes to visit a sheepman expert.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheepman expert says, I believe, my friend, you are cursed because you understand something is wrong. And he asks him, why do you think you're not... So they talk about the problems, and the sheepman's problem is just, it's just before Christmas and I just still haven't written anything. And and the sheepman expert asks him, so why do you think you can't compose? And the sheepman says, well, obviously it's the landlady, you know, she hates the stuff I do. I can't really find a safe space. And the sheepman says, well, he believes he's cursed because he's got a hole in him. And the reason why he's got a hole in him was because last Christmas, he ate donuts with a hole in them. And then he explained that he'd got out his sheepman's history. This is what you call it, sheepman history book. And he says, like, sheepmen are not supposed to eat any food with holes inside of them at Christmas time, because Christmas time is also the time of the holy sheepman.
Okay.
And yeah, I know it's very surreal with all this kind of terminology. But basically, I don't want to say anything, but it's basically, as with all Murakami books and novels, it's about filling the vacuum that you believe is inside of you, which is the big thing in his chef d'oeuvre, in his masterpiece. It's often considered the Wind Up Bird Chronicle or the Wind Up Bird Chronicle. So especially in that book and also in Kafka on the Shore, it's very much about people who feel there is something inside them that's empty. Or in Colorless Tsukuru and his Years of Pilgrimage, it's about a man who believes he's colorless and that his friends that basically are named after colors have all the colors. It's always about these postmodern figures that think there's something missing inside of them. And literally in this little novella, it's quite figuratively, he ate a donut with a hole in them he shouldn't have, and he's now got a hole inside of him. And how can he fill this hole? How can he find inspiration?
Is there
only got a few days before Christmas.
PJ, is there some similarity to Orwell here? I mean, I know the style is very different, but most of Orwell's books, we just reviewed a lot of them, have people who think that something's missing, maybe not from themselves, but from the world. But, you know, it's typically someone who feels that something's wrong. And maybe these sound like, although it's a different way of doing it, there is maybe something similar there.
I think so, yeah. I think it's just this concerned kind of postmodern kind of author. And Orwell's not exactly postmodern, but I think in both of them, it's a sense of, well, society doesn't make any sense. What's with all these wars? What's with people in general? Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a similar theme going on there.
Thought about that. It sounds that way. Well, you liked this one anyway. You liked it more than I liked my two so far.
Yeah, then the thing is, I love everything he does. And I particularly enjoy the fact that it's just like, it's not really something that you can read. It's hard to get this book. So there it is, guys. It's worth a love. It's The Sheepman's Christmas. Give it a try. And yeah, it's not out in a European language, I don't think. But you can definitely at least start off with the book which it comes from, which is A Wild Sheep's Chase. Sheep's Chase. Or just any of his books. Yeah, there you go. That's my Christmas read. Literally, The Sheepman's Christmas.
Okay. I did read some more. I've got three more books. Will I do the one I didn't like first, and then we can finish on happy things?
Go ahead.
H.G. Wells, The War of the Worlds. This was trash. Sorry, H.G. Wells. And it also suffers from the same problem as the La Casa de los Espíritus, very little dialogue. So it's almost as if H.G. Wells, author of The Time Machine, forgot to get in his time machine and listen to my review of La Casa de los Espíritus before he wrote this. But very little dialogue, again. Comes from just before 1900. Look, I never read H.G. Wells before because I thought I don't really like sci-fi. I knew I wouldn't like him. But then you may remember last year I read one of his books, The Wife of Sir Isaac Harman, and it's a standard Victorian romance, you know, and I loved it. I thought this is one of my favorite books of the year. I really love it. I'll give the chap a chance. Let's try one of his more famous books. I hated this. I really, really hated it. And it's very short, okay? You can see on the cover there's some Martian spaceships attacking some ships, some boats. Well, that's the entire story. No, so basically what happens is there's very little. I like books with character work. You know, that's why I like Dickens. And we don't get that here because it's just all description. So we don't really get to see characters. But very short book. You know, it is accessible. It's less than 200 pages. It still took me like a week to read it just because I was bored. But what happens here is some Martian ships land, and it's basically a cylinder. So a cylinder lands, they don't know what's in it, and then it turns out there's some Martians inside. They're in a big pit. They build these big machines, and then they go around with their heat ray laser thing, and they get to, you know, to kill things. And the chap runs away, and he's hiding at one point, and then he meets a curate, and they're kind of bunkered up in like a little room, and they can see what's going on. But in all honesty, not really a lot is going on. I don't know why people like this. I mean, you've heard of the book, right? I don't know if you know much about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of it, but haven't read it yet. I mean, I know it's a bit about the survival of the fittest, and there's a bit of Darwinist elements in them as well. But it's essentially just a sci-fi, right? I thought it was more of a just fun adventure book, the way it sounded.
Nah, he's just describing the Martians. And then, I mean, there's very, very, very little plot. For most of it, it's just long descriptions of, like, you know, they've got these cylinder things, and now they've got these flying machines and these other machines, and they've got long tentacles, and they're walking around. And then there's a big bit where he moves over and says, well, instead of telling you what's happening here, my brother is in London, so I'll give you what my brother told me happened in London. And then it's just more of the same. So it's just more descriptions of these things. It's just very dull. You know, the actual plot is a short story. You could do it in 10 pages, you know.
Yeah.
And again, we don't really give away the ending, but it's terrible. I mean, I thought maybe there'd be at least a smart ending. The ending is so weak. It's so bad. Like, I'm sorry, I love The Wife of Sir Isaac Harman, so I'm not saying, you know, H.G. Wells is a bad author or anything like this, and I haven't read The Time Machine, or I think he did The Invisible Man, you know, but this makes me scared. I will try him again, you know, we'll give him another try, but this one,
okay.
It did very little for me. There's so little to say about it. There's just
descriptions. Well, it doesn't have the usual Victorian sort of, you know, unmarried girl sitting on daddy's lap hoping to get some affection, right? So all that kind of nonsense.
It doesn't. Lacking the closest we get is obviously he's separated from his wife, so he wonders, you know, did she die in this? What was happened? And they think the Martians are taking over the whole world. And there's this one crazy soldier who thinks, well, we just got to get in, you know, get on board with it, and now this is the new world. This is the way it is. That's it. I mean, there's really no romance. There's almost not really a plot. You know, okay, some Martians come to the world. That's a premise rather than a plot. And then that's it. Like, there's nothing further that really happens, you know? And it's split into two books. And book two is Life Under the Martians. So I thought, oh, brilliant. We're going to get like a full regime of like what... I was thinking like Battlestar Galactica when they're on the planet and they're being held by the Cylons are running. No, there's nothing like that. It's just... I would say if you unless you really, really think you're going to love it, give this one a miss.
Mm-hmm. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.